D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David James here with you. The Predators have a big one, a huge one, a massive one tonight on the road in Los Angeles against the Kings. And to help us talk about that and much, much more, we go to our phone line driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet, who is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Hi, Elliot. How are you?
I'm good, Adam. How are you doing?
We're doing well. Thank you so much for joining us as always. So, Elliot, with the news earlier this week that the Maple Leafs are also now in the market for a GM, I've been wondering how the Toronto opening might affect the Predator search. How alike are Toronto's and Nashville's priorities in terms of the qualifications they are prioritizing in their prospective hires?
I think similar. One thing that is absolutely the same is that Toronto is saying, one thing that you guys did was said, we're going to find the right person and then we're going to build our front office around that person. Like, don't get caught up in titles. Don't get caught up in, how it all might look or be structured. Find the right individual and then build around them. That's the way that the Predators are talking. That is also the way the Maple Leafs are talking. Don't worry about whether it's a president of hockey operations, whether it's a general manager or both. Just find the person and build out your group. And that's where I think you guys are similar. In terms of candidates, like, the one thing I do believe is that this whole data-driven thing, it's the way the league is kind of going. Not only in terms of, it's not necessarily you have to be, like, for lack of a better term, like a hockey nerd or something like that. But you have, like, a lot of these people who own teams, and the Haslams are no different, they run very data-driven businesses and they make decisions because they are given evidence that leads them to believe that this is why this decision could work, or there's reason to believe that this decision will work. Hockey hasn't always been like that, and we're still figuring out where the data is all going to go. But I think that a lot of the owners now, especially as the teams become billion-dollar franchises, they want the people who own those companies, that's the way they make their decisions in the real world. So, it's not that they're unwilling to do things. It doesn't only have to be about the numbers. But if they say to you, we want to do something, and or explain to us why you want to spend, like, the owner of the Maple Leafs also owns the Blue Jays. They spent $500 million on Vladimir Guerrero last year. That looks like it's going to be a good buy, a good bet. But you've got to be able to go to them and say, this is why we want to spend the $500 million. This is what we think the value is, and explain it out. And I think the sport is very much headed into that.
Earlier this week, Elliot, we were discussing the pros and cons of the Toronto and Nashville jobs. We felt that the Predators have advantages in draft capital, their prospect pool, the whole no state taxes thing. But Toronto is Toronto. And being the Maple Leafs GM has a lot of history behind it. We talked about it with John Harbaugh choosing the New York Giants. The New York Giants haven't been the New York Giants in a while, but it is still being the head coach of the New York Giants. Do people around the NHL consider one job more attractive than the other?
I think that would depend on the person. First of all, I think Nashville's a great job. I do. If I was an executive in the league and somebody told me I could be the GM or the hockey operations leader of the Nashville Predators, I would be like, where to sign me up? I think the state tax thing, it matters. It's a great place to live, as you guys know. It does. It's a great place to live if you're single, and it's a great place to live if you have a family. People want to live there. There are people who move from other parts of the country into Nashville. Heck, you got LeBron James on a golf course today saying you should move an NBA team into Nashville.
Yes, I saw that.
So, I mean, like, the thing is, like, you're always going to have the ability to attract players to go there. So I think whenever you have that, it's like similar to the Florida Panthers. The Panthers weren't, I mean, you guys have had success. The Panthers did not have a lot of success. And all of a sudden they got hot, and all of a sudden everybody wanted to play there. You guys had success. When you did, people wanted to play there. Now it dropped a bit, but, you know, you're coming back. You've had Stamkos wanting to play there. You had Marchessault wanting to play there. You had O'Reilly wanting to play there. Like, guys want to play there. So that makes it a good job. I think also, and this depends on the person, there are some people who are not cut out to be the general manager or the hockey operations leader of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's what I call high risk, high reward. That, you know, if there's a lot of intensity, not everybody's built for that intensity. There's a lot of heat, there's a lot of pressure, but the rewards are enormous. If you are the person who finally wins in Toronto, you are going to be a god forever. You know, to win the Stanley Cup in Nashville would be a great thing, and you would be a huge hero in Nashville and among Predator Nation, but it's not the same level as Toronto, and I think that does appeal to people. I think the other thing is, and I always hate when I say this because people take it to, like, this stupid way of saying, oh, one team's cheaper than the other. It's not true. But Toronto has financial reserves and revenues that Nashville doesn't have. Like, and again, I'm not saying the Predators are cheap. I want people to understand that. But there are things Toronto can do at its disposal in addition to the salary cap that very few teams can do. And they do it. Like, as a matter of fact, I think people have started to wonder if it's like too comfortable to play in Toronto because they take care of everything. But when Toronto decides to flex its financial muscles in ways outside the salary cap that are legal, I'm not saying they're cheating, but just things around the rink, things that they can do, you know, stuff that they can build at their practice facility, just extra things to take care of players and make their medical stuff, all that stuff. Toronto can do it to a higher level than Nashville can.
One more for me, Elliot, before I hand it off to Willie and Derek. You've been doing a lot of reporting about the GM search, and yep. A name that you have brought up on multiple occasions is Peter Chiarelli. And when I saw that name, my first reaction was, ugh, just because I remember how his tenure in Edmonton went. It did not go particularly well. He made some, in hindsight, mind-boggling decisions. And he hasn't been in the big chair now for several years. He was working for the Blues, if I recall correctly, until recently.
That is right.
How is Chiarelli perceived around the NHL now that he has been out of that GM chair for the past several years?
Well, you know, I'll say this. Like, I'll be honest, Adam, and I'll just say this delicately. We don't have a lot of contact with each other. You know, he's the one thing I'll say is that I always believe that if you are willing, you can learn from your mistakes, right? And just because, like, I'm always willing to, whenever somebody becomes a person of interest in a job, you won a Stanley Cup in Boston, and then in Edmonton, you're right, it didn't go well. It ended very badly. I'm always willing to sit down with someone and say, what have you learned that went well and you would do again, or what didn't go well that you would never do again? And I'm always willing to listen to what someone has to say about that. And I'll just say this. I haven't spoken to Chiarelli in a long time. I don't know what he would say. But I think it's always dumb to not be willing to listen to somebody. And, you know, the thing is, Nashville's had a pretty interesting search. Like, it's kind of gone from, I think I've told you guys this, you have to be so careful with the word interview, because I don't, like, people are like, well, it wasn't a formal interview. And I'm like, I hate when people try to get me on language. It makes me crazy. But the truth is, it went from, like, a fact-finding mission to something a little more in-depth to now where I think you guys are starting, either are bringing people in or are going to bring people in. And I just don't know, like, I don't have any problem. I don't think there's anything wrong with someone saying, you know what, we'd like to sit down with Peter Chiarelli and hear what he has to say. Because the worst thing that happens is that you sit there and you say, you know what, this isn't one of our guys. And it's no harm, no foul. You spoke to him. Maybe he gave you a nugget that you can use. Maybe you heard something that can be part of your development, but not the right guy from us. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Now, just so you know, because I think you're probably down to about, I would probably say about five or so people. And I think three of them are Brett Peterson, Scott White, and Bill Scott. But I leave room open for the fact that there might be more.
Elliot Friedman is with us from 32 Thoughts. And Elliot, it's fascinating to talk about this because you brought up the whole data part of it that, I don't know, 25 years ago, I don't think it would have been a thing, right? Before the book Moneyball, I don't know if it was discussed that much in hockey circles. And we asked Barry Trotz about it philosophically the other day, and he mentioned how the GM really has to be in tune with the business side, the business part of the operation. And so, you know, you put all these things together and you do wonder if one person is really capable of being a strength in all of these areas. So it does have to be collective, which had us wondering, is it better to go with two guys, you know, a president of hockey ops and a GM, or can one guy delegate that underneath? So what's your sense of what they might be doing and what's the best way to do it? Is that the trend going forward?
Well, you know, Willie, just first of all, on the analytics thing, Scotty Bowman, who's won the most Stanley Cups as head coach of an NHL team, he won 9. People told me that back in the 70s, when he was coaching, I can't remember if he was in St. Louis or Montreal at the time. The first team he coached to was St. Louis, and the second team he coached was Montreal, and they were a dynasty. I think he won four in a row there, and he would keep stats like things like who got the puck. I remember players who played for him in the 70s told me that he would keep a stat like he would say, okay, there was a battle between these two guys for the puck. Who got it, our guy or the other guy? And he would tell guys, well, you didn't get the puck and you only got the puck X percent of the time. So I think on some level, this stuff has been going on for a long time, but it's obviously much, much more developed and refined now. And teams say that what they have available to them privately is far, far ahead of what gets shared publicly. And, you know, I will say this, like Keith Pelley, who's the CEO of MLSE, Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, he talked about AI this week, artificial intelligence. And I definitely believe there are teams fiddling around with that. Like, how can we do that to help us? So I think we're only going to a new stratosphere. Like, I'll say this. I absolutely feel in Toronto this year that when they let go of Brendan Shanahan and they had Tree Living, that Shanahan, he managed up. And if you're unfamiliar with what I mean by that, managing down is managing people lower than you on the organizational chart. And a lot of GMs do that. You manage the coach, you manage the players, you manage the American Hockey League team, minor leagues, all that, the draft, all that stuff. But managing up is managing, you know, who's above you on the organizational chart, a team president and, of course, the owner or the ownership group. Like in Nashville, that's Sean Henry, that's Michelle Kennedy, that's Bill Haslam. And I think that is an enormous part of the job now. Like Jim Neal, the GM in Dallas, who just got an extension, he once told me that he got into hockey management because he loves hockey. Since he became the GM, the thing he probably does the least is hockey because he's managing all the other right. stuff that Barry Trotz talks about. So, like, the one thing is, like, Willie, I don't know if it has to be, like, I would say this. Maybe it is going to be president of hockey operations or GM. But if Bill Haslam doesn't want to do that, then what I think he has to do and what everybody there in Nashville has to agree to is that there has to be one person on the staff and it has to be someone with a reasonably big title, like a vice president or something like that. Their job is to manage up on a daily basis. Because I don't think, and I especially saw this in Toronto this year, I don't think the general manager can manage up and down. The job is too big. I think you need one person, and maybe that's somebody whose responsibility is a qualified person, who, and it's got to be a senior person, who sits in all the hockey meetings, takes notes, coordinates with the GM. I have to speak to the president, or I have to speak to the owner, and I'm going to say, look, this is what our plan is, and this is what we're doing. And, you know, the one thing that people tell me is it used to be there wasn't a lot of interference from owners, depending, like some owners there always was, but some there weren't. Well, now these are billion-dollar businesses. And I think people are crazy if they don't think someone like Bill Haslam, who's paid close to $1 billion for the Nashville Predators, is going to sit there and say, I have total hands off. Like, it's a billion-dollar business. Of course he's going to want to know everything that's going on. And I do think there has to be one person whose primary job is managing up. It's too big a job.
Really interesting stuff. Elliot, before we let you go, let's look on the ice tonight. I'm out here in L.A. This is the first. It's a weird pattern because the next three games for the Predators here in L.A., up to San Jose to play the Sharks Saturday, and then back here to play L.A. and Anaheim back-to-back. It's obviously
I like that.
Make or break.
I wish it. I really like that because your travel to California is a long way, and I like that they did it with Minnesota this year too. I think they actually played back to back over three nights in L.A. That's the way it should be.
But wouldn't that be better? I like that better than why not just knock them out here?
Yeah, don't go back and forth. Like, knock them out there. I think first of all, it's a total fluke. It worked out great. It's two hugely dramatic games. But secondly, why not make the travel easier? I really like it. I think it's smart.
So tell me what you're seeing from Los Angeles as they go into this game. Obviously, it was a big, big win for them last night to jump up. But with the makeup of their team, obviously for people that maybe didn't see the Olympics, Kevin Fiala, the injury to him was a significant one for the Kings, but they've got Artemi Panarin. So take it from there since they changed their coach especially.
Well, so the thing about them is that they are really inconsistent and they are up and they're down and they're up and they're down. And like they are on a 7-game homestand that basically will determine their season. And the first game they played, they had a chance to move within 2 points of Vegas for third place in the Pacific Division in the first game of their homestand, which was on Saturday. And they lost 6-2 to Utah. And unfortunate, and then they rebounded last night. They got that big win over St. Louis in overtime. And that's them. They're on, they're off, they're on, they're off. They're very inconsistent. So they got a really gutsy win last night, but you have no idea which team is going to show up tonight. Now, as you mentioned, they made a coaching change. They have tried to become a little more aggressive. They were kind of, I don't want to say passive, but they weren't the most aggressive team. They have tried to become more aggressive. They've tried to dictate play a little bit. But the biggest problem that they have, Willie, is that they're on and they're off. And they're just not good. They don't put long streaks together of great performances. And, you know, we'll see. Like, they're probably feeling very good about themselves after that win last night. But, you know, you guys have, even though you've air traveled, you sat there, you're waiting for them. Get on them quick, and it'll be very interesting to see how they respond. They haven't always responded very well.
Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Freeman has been our guest on D-Mace Vingan and Donick. He joins us every Thursday at 5 during hockey season. Elliot, as always, fantastic stuff. We'll catch up next week.
All right, guys. Have a great actually, next week, I can't do Thursday. I'm going on vacation with my family. And I think I'm traveling home, so we'll have to figure out a way around that.
We understand. We understand you having to move because of family stuff. Totally understand.
I appreciate that, buddy.
All right, Elliot. 615-737-1025. A lot to get in there with Elliot. But let's look ahead to tonight's matchup with the LA Kings coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.